Welcome to Learning English on the Voice of America. I'm Katie Weaver. Our program is designed for people learning English. Coming up on the show, our programs, American Stories and Ask a Teacher. But first, here's Dorothy Gundy.
Dozens of Romanian children had their eyes examined for the first time in a rural area of the southern Carpathian Mountains in Romania. Casa Bună, or Good House, is a humanitarian organization. It planned the eye exams in Nucșoara, an area with many villages. Periodic eye exams are suggested from as early as 6 months old. But many children in the poor rural community had never been seen by an ophthalmologist, a doctor that specializes in eyes. Miuara Marinescu was the volunteer ophthalmologist at last Saturday's event. She told the Associated Press, out of 30 children tested, 20 needed glasses. She said that as many villages in the country as possible need events like this. The importance of testing children's eyes is not limited to corrective eyewear. Amblyopia is the condition known as lazy eye. It is when one eye becomes weak and no longer looks straight. It is estimated to affect 1 to 5% of children around the world. And missed cases can lead to problems in the future. Marinescu found 3 children with amblyopia when she examined them. She said this disorder can restrict individuals from certain professions in adulthood. The eye doctor said, in our country, children do not receive education or health equally. Valeriu Nicolaia founded Casa Bună in 2007. He comes from a poor Roma community himself. He said poor eyesight can have a serious, harmful effect on children's educational outcomes. Teachers think the kids hate to read, but in fact, they hate to read because they cannot read, because their eyesight is poor, Nicolaia said. Kids who cannot read because their eyes are really bad are useless in the educational process. They get fed up and they drop out. The volunteer organization supports more than 300 children and their families. It most importantly believes in supporting children to follow education. The group has played a key part in helping children during the pandemic. Casa Bună arrived in Nucșoara more than a year ago. The city is 200 kilometers northwest of the capital, Bucharest. Volunteers visit every 2 weeks. They bring aid to 94 children and their families. Nicolaia said, it was the start of the pandemic, and practically none of these kids had internet or computers. We put computers in all of their houses, made sure they have internet, and all they need to stay online to continue their education. Dozens of volunteers joined the eye testing event. Even motorcyclists, persons who ride a vehicle with two wheels, from the group Bikers for Humanity joined. The volunteers organized activities and games to bring in as many children as possible. Casabuna also brought children's gifts for International Children's Day, which took place on June 1st. Nicolaya said, "We'll do eye testing this year in 9 villages. We hope to make anywhere between 600 to 1,000 pairs of glasses." He has won international awards for his work to better children's education. Romania has a population of more than 19 million people. It has the highest percentage of children at risk of becoming poor and socially rejected in the 27-country European Union. The European Agency on Data, Eurostat, found Romania's rate is 35.8% compared to an EU average of 22.5%. Poor children are usually found in the country's rural communities. About 50% of children are poor in these areas. Ophthalmologist Marinescu said that we should all have equal ability to have education and health care from the moment we are born. She believes it should not matter where we are born. I'm Dorothy Gundy.
In Egypt, workers dig and remove sand to create a new opening at a busy archaeological site outside of Cairo. They are at the bottom of the Step Pyramid of Djoser, probably the world's oldest pyramid. This new dig has found many additional artifacts. As the world slowly recovers from the coronavirus pandemic, Egypt has been trying for months to persuade visitors to come to its archaeological locations and museums. Officials are hoping the new discovery will bring in the visitors and their money. But like countries elsewhere, Egypt continues to battle the coronavirus. It is struggling to get its people vaccinated. In early May, the government announced that 1 million people had been vaccinated, though that number is believed to be higher now. Meanwhile, officials have continued to tell the world about their new discoveries. In November, archaeologists announced the discovery of at least 100 coffins dating back to the Pharaonic Late Period and Greco-Ptolemaic era. They also found 40 gold-covered statues thought to have been buried 2,500 years ago. A month earlier, they discovered 57 additional coffins at the same place, the necropolis of Saqqara, that includes the Step Pyramid. Saqqara is a treasure, Tourism and Antiquities Minister Khaled El-Anani told the Associated Press. He estimated that only 1% of the treasures hidden there have been found. In April, Zahi Hawass, Egypt's best-known archaeologist, announced the discovery of a 3,000-year-old lost city in southern Luxor. It has the remains of houses, tools, and other artifacts that date to Amenhotep III of the 18th dynasty. He ruled from 1390 to 1353 BC. This was Egypt's golden age. That discovery was followed by a televised parade celebrating the moving of 22 royal mummies to their new home, the National Museum of Egyptian Civilization. It is a large new building just south of the capital. The Red Sea town of Sharm el-Sheikh is well-liked by visitors and is now home to a new archaeological museum. The Cairo International Airport also houses a new museum. Officials have said they plan to open the new Grand Egyptian Museum next to the Giza pyramids by January. Prices to enter archaeological sites have been lowered, as has the cost of visas to enter the country. In 2019, foreign visitors brought an estimated $13 billion to the country, as some 13.1 million people came to see its museums and archaeological sites. But in 2020, only 3.5 million foreign visitors came, Minister El-Anani said. He added that the number of visitors had increased in the first months of 2021, but he gave no exact numbers. Egypt is a perfect destination for post-COVID, El-Anani said, adding that most of the places to visit are open air. It is, however, unclear if Egypt has the virus under control. It has recorded more than 15,000 deaths and is still seeing more than 1,000 new cases every day. Numbers are thought by many to be much higher. Officials have arrested doctors and others who question the government's actions or numbers. Egypt closed its borders completely until the summer of 2020, but later welcomed visitors back. They were permitted first to visit Red Sea towns. Now they can go to the heart of the country, Cairo and the Nile River Valley, that holds most of its famous archaeological sites. Visitors still require a COVID-19 test result to enter the country. Amanda, a 39-year-old from Austria, returned to Egypt in May. It was her second visit in 4 years. "Once they opened, I came," she said. "It was my dream to see the pyramids again." I'm Susan Shand.
Jahanzeb Khan writes, "What is the difference between will and would? How and when should we use these?" Dear Jahanzeb, thank you for your question. It centers on modal auxiliaries, words that come before and change the meaning of the main verb in English sentences. When you study will and would, be sure that you have a strong understanding of the main verb. Grammar books often call will the base or present form and would the past form. However, modals do not always connect to exact ideas about present and past time. Consider these two examples. The main verb is go.
I will go to the store tomorrow. I would go to the store, but my car isn't working.
The first statement suggests a future action, while the second statement suggests a wish about a present situation. For now, let us leave aside these issues and explore a few clear ways English speakers use will and would. Will can mark future time, as in the example you heard earlier.
I will go to the store tomorrow.
But it also has other uses, as in...
The reason my friend has done so well in business is that he will not invest in risky companies.
That statement suggests a general policy or rule that has been in place for a long time. Will can also be used for commands, as in,
you will finish your homework.
Would often suggests a wish or desire about a present situation. For example,
I wish it would stop snowing.
Would can also be used for polite requests, as in,
what would you like to eat?
Or,
excuse me, would you be able to tell me where the train station is?
Think of Will and Would as family members, perhaps sisters. Will, the strong, firm sister, is often used for commands or actions. Would, the quieter, softer one, is used more for expressing dreams, wishes, possibilities, and polite requests. This comparison is not perfect, but it does provide a general idea about the difference between will and would. When you read news stories or listen to English speakers, pay careful attention to how they use will and would. And that's Ask a Teacher. I'm John Russell.
Now, Shep O'Neill brings us The American Story, Pigs is Pigs, by Ellis Parker Butler.
Mike Flannery, the agent of the Interurban Express Company, leaned over the desk in the company's office in Westcott and shook his fist. Mr. Morehouse, angry and red, stood on the other side of the desk, shaking with fury. The argument had been long and hot. At last, Mr. Morehouse had become speechless. The cause of the trouble lay on the desk between the two men. It was a box with two guinea pigs inside. "Do as you like, then," shouted Flannery. "Pay for them and take them, or don't pay for them and leave them here. Rules are rules, Mr. Morehouse, and Mike Flannery is not going to break them." "But you stupid idiot," shouted Mr. Morehouse, madly shaking a thin book beneath the agent's nose. "Can't you read it here, in your own book of transportation rates? Pets, domestic, Franklin to Westcott, if correctly boxed, 25 cents each." He threw the book on the desk. "What more do you want? Aren't they pets? Aren't they domestic? Aren't they correctly boxed? What?" He turned and walked back and forth rapidly with a furious look on his face. "Pets," he said. "P-E-T-S. 25 cents each. 2 times 25 is 50. Can you understand that? I offer you 50 cents. Flannery reached for the book. He ran his hand through the pages and stopped at page 64. "I don't take 50 cents, he whispered in an unpleasant voice. "Here's the rule for it. When the agent be in any doubt about which two rates should be charged on a shipment, he shall charge the larger. The person receiving the shipment may put in a claim for the overcharge. In this case, Mr. Morehouse, I be in doubt. Pets them animals may be, and domestic they may be, but pigs I'm sure they do be. And my rule says, plain as the nose on your face, pigs, Franklin to Westcott, 30 cents each." Mr. Morehouse shook his head savagely. "Nonsense," he shouted. "Confounded nonsense, I tell you. That rule means common pigs, not guinea pigs."
Pigs is pigs, Flannery said firmly. Mr. Morehouse bit his lip and then flung his arms out wildly. Very well, he shouted. You shall hear of this. Your president shall hear of this. It is an outrage. I have offered you 50 cents. You refuse it. Keep the pigs until you are ready to take the 50 cents. But by George, sir, if one hair of those pigs' heads is harmed, I will have the law on you. He turned and walked out, slamming the door. Flannery carefully lifted the box from the desk and put it in a corner. Mr. Morehouse quickly wrote a letter to the president of the Transportation Express Company. The president answered, informing Mr. Morehouse that all claims for overcharge should be sent to the Claims Department. Mr. Morehouse wrote to the Claims Department. 1 week later, he received an answer. The Claims Department said it had discussed the matter with the agent at Westcott. The agent said Mr. Morehouse had refused to accept the 2 guinea pigs shipped to him. Therefore, the department said, Mr. Morehouse had no claim against the company and should write to its tariff department. Mr. Morehouse wrote to the tariff department. He stated his case clearly. The head of the tariff department read Mr. Morehouse's letter. Huh, guinea pigs, he said. Probably starved to death by this time. He wrote to the agent asking why the shipment was held up. He also wanted to know if the guinea pigs were still in good health. Before answering, Agent Flannery wanted to make sure his report was up to date. So he went to the back of the office and looked into the cage. Good Lord, there were now 8 of them, all well and eating like hippopotamuses. He went back to the office and explained to the head of the tariff department what the rules said about pigs. And as for the condition of the guinea pigs, said Flannery, they were all well. But there were 8 of them now, all good eaters. The head of the tariff department laughed when he read Flannery's letter. He read it again and became serious. By George, he said, Flannery is right. Pigs is pigs. I'll have to get something official on this. He spoke to the president of the company. The president treated the matter lightly. What is the rate on pigs and on pets? He asked. Pigs, 30 cents. Pets, 25, the head of the tariff department answered. Then, of course, guinea pigs are pigs, the president said. Yes, the head of the tariff department agreed. I look at it that way, too. A thing that can come under 2 rates is naturally to be charged at the higher one. But are guinea pigs pigs? Aren't they rabbits? Come to think of it, the president said, I believe they are more like rabbits, sort of halfway between pig and rabbit. I think the question is this. Are guinea pigs of the domestic pig family? I'll ask Professor Gordon. He is an expert about such things. The president wrote to Professor Gordon. Unfortunately, the professor was in South America, collecting zoological samples. His wife forwarded the letter to him. The professor was in the high Andes Mountains. The letter took many months to reach him. In time, The president forgot the guinea pigs. The head of the tariff department forgot them. Mr. Morehouse forgot them. But Agent Flannery did not. The guinea pigs had increased to 32. He asked the head of the traffic department what he should do with them. "Don't sell the pigs," Agent Flannery was told. "They are not your property. Take care of them until the case is settled." The guinea pigs needed more room. Flannery made a large and airy room for them in the back of his office. Some months later, he discovered he now had 160 of them. He was going out of his mind. Not long after this, the president of the express company heard from Professor Gordon. It was a long and scholarly letter. It pointed out that the guinea pig was the Cavia aporia, while the common pig was the genus Sus of the family Suidae. The president then told the head of the traffic department that guinea pigs are not pigs and must be charged only 25 cents as domestic pets. The traffic department informed Agent Flannery that he should take the 160 guinea pigs to Mr. Morehouse and collect 25 cents for each of them. Agent Flannery wired back, "I've got 800 now. Shall I collect for 800 or what? How about the $64 I paid for cabbages to feed them?" Many letters went back and forth. Flannery was crowded into a few feet at the extreme front of the office. The guinea pigs had all the rest of the room. Time kept moving on as the letters continued to go back and forth. Flannery now had 4,064 guinea pigs. He was beginning to lose control of himself. Then he got a telegram from the company that said, "Error in guinea pig bill. Collect for two guinea pigs 50 cents." Flannery ran all the way to Mr. Morehouse's home, but Mr. Morehouse had moved. Flannery searched for him in town, but without success. He returned to the express office and found that 206 guinea pigs had entered the world since he left the office. At last, he got an urgent telegram from the main office. "Send the pigs to the main office of the company at Franklin." Flannery did so. Soon came another telegram. "Stop sending pigs. Warehouse full." But he kept sending them. Agent Flannery finally got free of the guinea pigs. "Rules may be rules," he said, "but so long as Flannery runs this express office, pigs is pets, and cows is pets, and horses is pets, and lions and tigers and Rocky Mountain goats is pets, and the rate on them is 25 cents. Then he looked around and said cheerfully, "Well, anyhow, it is not as bad as it might have been. What if them guinea pigs had been elephants?"
And that's our show. But we'll be back tomorrow. I'm Katie Weaver.